It's the Noon Report from Family Life, bringing a Christian worldview to what's happening in New York, Pennsylvania, across the country, and around the world. Weather with Kevin Williams, sports with Sunny Delfiette, plus special features and reports with the Family Life News team. Now, here's what's happening.
No regrets. Good afternoon. Welcome to the broadcast. President Biden standing by his decision to pull us out of Afghanistan.
How many more generations of America's daughters and sons would you have me send to fight Afghanistan's civil war when Afghan troops will not? How many more lives, American lives, is it worth?
The commander-in-chief says he inherited the exit strategy from his predecessor, South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham.
Joe Biden is responsible for this, not Donald Trump. Donald Trump had a conditions-based withdrawal. Joe Biden has been incompetent most of his political life when it comes to foreign policy. As commander-in-chief, he is now dangerous.
Today, senior Taliban leaders were negotiating the surrender of the country in Kabul. They say they want an inclusive government, but have vowed to set up an Islamic state and institute Sharia law. Arkansas Senator Tom Cotton says the Afghan army had its legs cut out from under it by the Biden administration. He's not surprised they fell as fast as they did.
He pulled the rug out from underneath the Afghan army over the last 4, 5, 6 weeks. We shouldn't be surprised that when we train them to fight one way and then we prevent them from fighting that way, that they oftentimes got overrun by the Taliban.
At the White House yesterday, the president said 20 years of fighting is long enough in Afghanistan.
I'm now the fourth American president to preside over war in Afghanistan. I will not pass this responsibility on to a fifth president. The buck stops with me.
But critics say the commander-in-chief missed the warning signs that could have avoided the collapse of the country.
This is Biden's biggest blunder. It's his Saigon moment.
This is one of the greatest disasters in modern American history.
That's what they were told. That's what they were warned would happen. They didn't care. And now we see the consequences of it.
The U.S. military has cleared the runways at the Kabul airport and have resumed flights out of the country. Reporter Roxana Saberi is standing by from the capital city.
Taliban fighters have been seen walking in the streets of Kabul, armed, also in vehicles left behind by the retreating Afghan security forces.
The Taliban reportedly going door to door in Kabul with kill lists, looking to enact revenge on Afghans who assisted us during the war. Florida Senator Marco Rubio fears the next generation of terrorists will hail from Afghanistan.
Al-Qaeda is coming back to Afghanistan, let there be no doubt. They are coming back, they will reconstitute, they will pose a threat again. And this administration has no plan whatsoever to prevent that from happening.
There are 6,000 U.S. troops in Afghanistan today, twice the number that were there when President Biden ordered them out back in the spring. Could things get any worse in Haiti? The earthquake-stricken country is reeling after that devastating earthquake on Saturday that has claimed at least 1,400 lives, another 6,000 injured, the BBC's James Clayton.
What they really need is medical attention. Medical attention that probably can only be received in Port-au-Prince, which is hours and hours drive away through very difficult terrain, very difficult in terms of the political situation here as well. A lot of the roads in and out are controlled by gangs.
30,000 Haitians left homeless by the earthquake. The country is also reeling from the remnants of Tropical Storm Grace. Federal health officials expected to issue guidance this week on new COVID booster shots. You and I could start getting them 8 months after our second coronavirus vaccine. Correspondent Peter King.
The first boosters will likely go to nursing home residents, healthcare workers, and then seniors who were at the front of the line when vaccinations began. All of this to give the most vulnerable the most protection against the Delta variant.
These boosters could start becoming available as soon as September. CNN's Chris Cuomo has broken his silence about his brother, Andrew, the outgoing governor of New York.
It was a unique situation being a brother to a politician in a scandal and being part of the media. I tried to do the right thing, and I just want you all to know that.
Cuomo returned to his primetime show last night after a brief hiatus. He has been implicated in some of the scandals swirling about the governor's office. Andrew Cuomo's last day on the job is 1 week from today. Tropical Storm Fred roared ashore along the Florida Panhandle yesterday. Manuel Bohorquez is in Panama City.
The main concern going forward, the rainfall. Some areas could see 4 to 8 inches of rain. That is certainly enough to trigger flash flooding.
What's left of Fred could spawn tornadoes in the southeast today. We'll see the leftovers of the storm midweek, especially our listeners in Pennsylvania already seeing some flood watches go up there. More Americans are experimenting with marijuana.
Nearly half of Americans now say they have experimented with marijuana.
And I didn't like it. And didn't inhale.
49% is the highest number recorded since Gallup started asking this question. The numbers are consistent among the generations. Baby boomers, Gen Xers, and millennials, all around that 50% mark. Not enough data yet for the Gen Z crowd. The percentage of Americans who say they still smoke marijuana regularly is holding steady at 12%. I'm Rory O'Neill.
Still to come on the Noon Report for a Tuesday, COVID clinics in PA schools, vaccine mandate in New York, and closing time in Buffalo. First, let's stop by the Weather Center, Kevin Williams.
Well, good afternoon to all. The humid air is going to be with us now for the next several days and nights. Showers and thunderstorms will be the result. I'll have forecast details coming up in 10 minutes.
All right, we'll see you then. Thanks, Kevin. Let's check the headlines from New York and Pennsylvania. New York State mandating COVID shots for all healthcare workers. Those employed at hospitals, nursing homes, long-term care facilities must get the vaccine by September 27th. Some in the nursing home industry are concerned.
The New York State Nurses Association has concerns about having enough staff to care for the growing number of patients. They say hospitals must also ensure that new mandates do not contribute to already problematic staffing shortages.
Kayla Green with WIVB-TV in Buffalo. Those who refuse to get the jab could lose their job. Mark Irwin is director of nursing at Kirkhaven, a nursing home in Rochester.
You know, we may have a few people here and there who might decide to leave, but it's a mandate in every healthcare facility right now. And of course, we don't want to lose anyone. Everyone's precious at this critical time.
Now, your personal beliefs are not going to be enough to prevent you from getting vaccinated and keeping your job.
That's Leslie Silva, an attorney from Rochester. There are limited exceptions to the vaccine mandate for religious or medical reasons. Statewide, about 70% of nursing home workers are currently vaccinated. Pennsylvania is enlisting the support of schools to help increase its COVID vaccination rate. It's setting up COVID clinics inside the schools.
The key is to get as many Pennsylvanians vaccinated so that we can stop the spread of COVID-19 and the Delta variant.
Health Secretary Allison Bean.
Because adolescents under age 12 still cannot be vaccinated to protect themselves against the virus, we need all of the people surrounding them to get vaccinated.
She says these in-school clinics are the key to preserving in-person education during this ongoing pandemic.
To supplement vaccinations, we're introducing a no-cost voluntary testing program for all K through 12 schools to help keep kids in classrooms and COVID out.
80% of Pennsylvania's adult population has received at least one dose of the vaccine. Steuben County, New York, now requiring masks indoors in all government buildings, regardless of your vaccination status. This comes after the CDC increased the risk level for COVID transmission in the county from low to substantial. The impeachment probe into outgoing Governor Andrew Cuomo will continue in New York despite his resignation. And not only that, the Assembly Judiciary Committee says it will issue a public report.
I'm hopeful that this is one step closer to gaining accountability for those 11 sexual harassment victims, for those 15,000 residents who died in the nursing homes, and to the taxpayers who have been footing the bill the entire time.
Assemblyman Mike Tenusis says the impeachment investigation could wind up costing taxpayers $10 million. The fencing coach for Team USA at the recently concluded Summer Olympics was tragically killed this week in a motorcycle crash. It happened in Potter County, Pennsylvania. 62-year-old Bucky Leach hit a deer on Route 6 in Pike Township and was ejected from the bike. New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio is hinting that there may be a COVID vaccine mandate coming for teachers. Steve Burns has that story.
Asked if he might be following in the footsteps of Chicago and Los Angeles requiring teachers to get vaccinated,
The mayor said, stay tuned.
New York's controversial vaccine passport rule took effect today in the Big Apple. It means you must show proof of vaccination in order to eat in restaurants, work out at gyms, or take in a movie in New York City. Two long-time eateries in Buffalo, New York are no more. The popular Lake Effect Diner is shutting down after 19 years, and the Steer Restaurant and Saloon is closing after 28 years. The owners blame the worker shortage problem that's led to thousands of small businesses closing up shop all across this country. A few weeks until school starts, and districts across New York are scrambling to recruit bus drivers. Their numbers are in short supply, as they say. Leslie Bukowski is the director of transportation at Niagara Wheatfield Central near Buffalo.
This is a rewarding job. You are always the first person in the morning, the first person in the afternoon that child sees.
The bus driver shortage so bad that wages have been increased to $20 an hour, and some districts are now offering $1,500 signing bonuses. This is the Noon Report on Family Life. Let's check sports next. The New York Mets heading in the wrong direction. They lost their fourth straight. They fall further back in the NL East. The Giants beat them at home 7-5 last night on a pair of Chris Bryant home runs. Mets third baseman J.D. Davis.
I think we just need to keep grinding. That's the only thing we can do. Stay positive and turn the page and learn from today and get after it tomorrow. That's the only thing we can do. Just play some baseball.
Atlanta, meantime, moved a game and a half up in the division over the idle Phillies with a 12-2 thrashing of Miami. Cincinnati is red hot. They beat the Cubs 14-5. Cincy getting closer to that second wild card spot. First baseman Joey Votto belted career hit number 2,000 in that one. Said afterward,
fans have been very supportive also, and I have felt the love from them, truly. So thank you. Thank you to the fan base, the Reds fan base. Cincinnati has been good to me for a long time.
The Cubs have lost 12 straight, just two short of their franchise record. The New York Yankees win their third straight, 2-1 over the Angels in the Bronx. Gerrit Cole made a strong return from his bout with COVID. He struck out 9 over 5 and 2/3 innings to pick up his 11th win on the season. Joey Gallo went deep for the Bronx Bombers.
It was a pretty big home run. I didn't realize it would be the kind of the game-winning home run, and but that's how baseball goes. So you gotta get those runs when you can, but it was pretty electric in there. It was one of the coolest home runs I've had, I think.
The Yankees host a day-night doubleheader against their arch-rival Boston today at the stadium. The Red Sox just two games ahead of New York in the AL East. Tampa leads that division by 3.5 games. And one more bit of baseball news. MLB is coming back to Iowa next year. The Chicago Cubs will play the Cincinnati Reds in the 2022 Field of Dreams game in Dyersville, Iowa. That game will be played August 11th in 2022. Last week's inaugural Field of Dreams game between the White Sox and Yankees was MLB's most watched regular season game in 16 years. At the Family Life Sports Desk, I'm Bob Price. And still to come on the Noon Report, for a Tuesday, Biden defends his decision. COVID booster on the way, and so too is Kevin Williams with your wet weather details. 4 minutes from right now.
As the world watches the disaster unfold in Afghanistan, there's another chapter of the story that we're not hearing much about. The fate of a growing and new group of Christians there. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street. This is Breakpoint. Whenever I want to know what's happening around the world, especially in the Middle East, and especially when it comes to Christians in the Middle East, I turn to my friend Mindy Belts, the senior editor at World News Group and author of the book, They Say We Are Infidels. Mindy has been studying and visiting the Middle East for decades. She has on-the-ground knowledge of the situation there. And so, when we saw the reemergence of the Taliban and overtaking Afghanistan over the last several days, I immediately contacted Mindy, and she was gracious enough to join me in an extended conversation looking at the situation on the ground in Afghanistan from a variety of different angles. The failure of the last several presidential administrations, the current unrealistic timeline for withdrawing troops, and the patience of a group of Islamic radicals and what that means for the world from here on out. But she also mentioned a group that I wasn't aware of, a new and growing group of young believers coming out of an Islamic background. It's an incredible story, and this group of young believers will now have their faith put to the test and their courage as they face an incredibly difficult situation. Here's Mindy Belts explaining.
It's a unique community, mostly young people, and by young people, I mean 40 and under, that is all Muslim converts. And the people who study people groups and Christian movements say that it's one of the fastest growing churches in the world. And if you are a tiny, tiny church and you double in size, you can be the fastest growing in the world. So it is still very small. It's a couple thousand people, maybe. But they are an important force in Afghanistan simply because of the force that the gospel has. And they also, because I've seen the reach that they have, I mean, the love of Jesus is a real thing, and it's a real thing in a dark place like a Taliban-shadowed country. And so I've seen the effect that many of these young believers have had in their university settings. A number of the leaders in this community did a really amazing and brave thing starting about 2 years ago, and that is that they decided they wanted to change their identity, their religious affiliation on their national ID cards. You know, we don't appreciate this, but this part of the world, everyone has a national ID card. They're used all the time for all kinds of things, and they always have religious affiliation. And that affiliation tends to be handed down. So the affiliation on your card is probably whatever your father's was. These elders in these churches wanted to change their identification for the sake of future generations. And not everyone was in agreement that this was a good idea, but several dozen of them pushed through and have actually changed their identification. So they, in the government records, where they are registered with the Afghan government, it says that they are Christians. And it's interesting that those are the ones who over the past few days.
That was my friend Mindy Bout, senior editor at World News Group, giving us a perspective of a group of believers on the ground whose faith and courage is being tested right now. Please join me in prayer for this group of believers and for everything that's happening on the ground in Afghanistan right now. You can listen to my entire conversation with Mindy Bout by either subscribing to the Breakpoint podcast or visiting breakpoint.org. Or you can find a video of the conversation on one of our social media channels, like the Breakpoint Facebook page. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street with Breakpoint.
Kevin Williams weather next.
Here is your family life weather forecast. Our call for this afternoon, cloudy, hazy, humid. From time to time, a shower, a thunder shower with a local downpour. The high in the mid-70s to the near 80. Rather cloudy and humid tonight and tomorrow with a few showers and thunderstorms. Low tonight, mid-60s to near 70. Mid-70s to mid-80s tomorrow. And again, there could be some enhanced rainfall later tomorrow night into Thursday morning. From central and northeast Pennsylvania into south-central New York, some localized flooding could ensue.
All right, Kevin, thank you for that. This is the Noon Report on Family Life. I'm your host, Bob Price, and here's what's happening this Tuesday afternoon, the 17th of August. President Biden is defending his decision to cut ties in Afghanistan, a country now controlled by the Taliban.
Here's what I believe to my core. It is wrong to order American troops to step up when Afghanistan's own armed forces would not.
Pentagon spokesman John Kirby says the fall of Afghanistan
happened very fast. And one of the things that we couldn't anticipate and didn't anticipate was the degree to which Afghan forces capitulated, sometimes without a fight.
Former CIA analyst Matt Zeller.
The idea that the Afghan military should be blamed for this. Do you know how many casualties the Afghan military took in an average year? More than the United States did in 20.
The Biden administration hinting today it might be willing to recognize the Taliban as a legitimate government, so long as it does not harbor terrorists or persecute its people. Former federal prosecutor Trey Gowdy.
Joe Biden for four decades was wrong on nearly every major foreign policy and national security decision. Four decades worth. I'm happy he kept a campaign promise because he seems really, really interested in doing that. I'm just sorry for y'all the carnage left behind because he did.
The fall of Afghanistan not sitting well with those who served in America's longest war. Correspondent David Martin says the troops he spoke with feel like their sacrifice was in vain.
Juan Dominguez was a Marine Lance Corporal in 2010, sent into the Taliban heartland of Helmand Province, where his battalion lost 25 men killed. He lost both legs and an arm, but incredibly has fashioned a new life as a drummer. His thoughts are with the Afghans who helped the Marines and are now at the mercy of the Taliban.
We have seemingly turned our backs on them and just pray for them, as our government didn't help them get that a safe passage out.
It's a disgrace to this country to depart like this.
Retired Army Colonel Dave Rostrom lost his son, Jonathan, at the Battle of Wannat in 2008.
This is very disheartening.
I hate to ask this question. Does it feel to you like your son died for nothing?
You know, my son died trying to protect his fellow soldiers. But for the ultimate cause of stabilizing the country and establishing a good government, yes, it was a sacrifice that was for naught.
That report from David Martin at the Pentagon. Misery knows no end in hard-hit Haiti. The death toll from Saturday's earthquake, now more than 1,400. Over 6,000 were injured. An unknown number are missing. More than 30,000 Haitians have been left homeless. This as a tropical depression continues to soak the region with as much as 10 inches of rain.
Overnight, tropical depression Grace dumping more heavy rain on this country, leading to fears of more mudslides. But Haitian authorities say the death toll from the earthquake is rising.
Reporter Gabe Gutierrez in Port-au-Prince. Federal health officials poised to recommend a COVID booster shot for all Americans.
People, regardless of age, would need it 8 months after they received their second dose. The move is being taken to protect against the highly contagious Delta variant, which is fueling the spread of new cases across the country. Right now, more than 168 million Americans are fully vaccinated against the virus. That's roughly 51% of the U.S. population.
Reporter Tom Hansen, COVID news in the NFL.
The Las Vegas Raiders and New Orleans Saints, first teams in the NFL to require all fans attending home games to show proof of COVID vaccination. The Raiders will offer shots on site for the unvaccinated. In New Orleans, a negative COVID test and a mask will suffice. The Atlanta Falcons are the first team to report all of its players in camp have gotten their shots.
Correspondent Steve Kaffin, New York lawmakers doing an about-face on the Cuomo impeachment probe just a week before the governor is due to step down.
After 3 days of backlash over the announcement the inquiry would be suspended after Governor Cuomo said he was resigning, the impeachment probe is on again. Assembly Speaker Carl Hastie says the Judiciary Committee will continue to review evidence and issue a final report, but the New York Times notes Hastie's reversal doesn't mean Cuomo will actually face impeachment, since state lawmakers apparently don't have the authority to impeach a governor after he's out of office. Sarah Lee Kessler, New York.
And CNN's Chris Cuomo is breaking his silence about his brother.
Chris Cuomo waited till the very end of his CNN show last night to finally talk about his brother, Andrew.
I've told you, it's never easy being in this business and coming from a political family. Everyone knows you support your family. But you should also know I never covered my brother's troubles because I obviously have a conflict.
Chris admitted to once again advising his brother, this time to resign as governor. Some of Cuomo's fellow journalists at CNN have reportedly asked that he be fired for failing to tell the network he had been advising his brother for months on how to handle the sex harassment scandal surrounding him. Noam Layden, New York.
Next at noon, a closer look at the Taliban, the ones calling the shots now in Afghanistan. They claim they want a peaceful transfer of power after seizing control of the country this week. But Dr. Zudi Jasser, president of the American Islamic Forum for Democracy, says you cannot trust the Taliban.
Make no mistake, the Taliban is Afghanistan's ISIS. You don't negotiate with terrorists. These are folks that enslave women. They throw gays off cliffs and off of roofs. They commit marital rape. They want to bring Afghanistan back not only to what it was pre our intervention, but back to the 13th century in which there's torture and otherwise. And now they're going to do it with abandon. They're not going to have any limitations or any obstacles to doing what they want because they know America doesn't have the stomach for the military fight, let alone the ideological one. And they're going to be backed by Iran and every other Islamist on the planet. So this is not the America I know. It is sad that this is the way we had to leave. It didn't have to be this way.
Dr. Jasser fears the fall of Afghanistan will weaken America on the world stage.
Ownership is perception. Yes, we owned a lot of Afghanistan over the past 20 years, but we didn't have to own this departure. We could have publicly handed it off. Families like mine escaped persecution in Syria, Iran, wherever our families came from, to come to freedom in the West because American is a beacon of liberty. We don't abandon people that share our values, and yet That's the narrative that we leave with, that we've wasted. We turned on a dime. We left them and abandoned them. All the good that we did the last 20 years, the Biden fecklessness now has left and wasted because of lack of planning, lack of strategy. That's not the America that I know, that my family knew. And as a Muslim fighting for reform, I can't tell you what power this gives to our Islamist enemies.
Dr. Zudi Jasser, president of the American Islamic Forum for Democracy. This is the Noon Report. Another edition of Hometown Heroes on Family Life. I'm your host, Bill Price. Our guest this week, Richard Kaufman, a former addict and member of the military. He now coaches others to avoid the mistakes he once made.
I was addicted before I joined the military. I was an alcoholic by the age of 13. So when I joined the military, I was an alcoholic. And then I found drugs. And that's when Uncle Sam decided he didn't want me as a nephew anymore. And that's when he booted me out. So I think the military just makes you more of whatever you are. So if you're a good person, it makes you more of a good person. If you were a rotten person like I was at that time, it just makes you more of a rotten person.
By the age of 13, a full-blown alcoholic, why?
My father left when I was 3 months old. My mom was an addict. So it was just kind of helped me escape reality, where I became a different person when I had that first drink. And I felt my body light up, and I felt like a different person. So that's when I became Rick instead of being Richard. So I think that's when I kind of had a different personality when I was drinking.
You joined the military, and then what happens?
Spent 2.5 years in, and then I got into a lot of trouble, got locked up, and they eventually threw me out for being a drug addict and alcoholic. And by the grace of God, I got back in the military and spent over 23 years in the military between Army and National Guard.
Suffered some PTSD. Share with us how you were able to overcome a lot of this stuff and where you're at today.
9/11 really changed my whole life, because actually where I'm sitting right now, we're overlooking the Twin Towers, where they once stood. And, you know, we knew people that were in the towers that day. So I became a broken man that day. And that's when I dedicated my life to trying to help people that can't help themselves.
So would you say overall the experience in the military was good for you?
Yes, it was very good. It taught me how to be a man. It taught me honesty, integrity, loyalty. It taught me everything that I am today.
And for those who've hit rock bottom, many times they're the best folks to give advice. They've been there. They've seen that. How did you bounce back?
I had to do a lot of self-reflection, and I had to do three things that I tell everybody, that because I'm a coach, and three things that I tell them. You know, I've been in recovery for 32 years now. I haven't had a drink or drug since 89. First, you have to forgive people that have hurt you. Second, you have to ask for forgiveness of people that you've hurt. And third of all is you have to forgive yourself for things that you've done in the past. You can't move forward if you're always holding on to the past.
Key word there, forgiveness. It's easy to say, tough to do, one of the toughest things to do. You're known, as you mentioned there, as the comeback coach in your community. Tell us about that.
Well, just because I've personally come back from, you know, drug addiction, alcoholism, homelessness, PTSD, a traumatic brain injury, and now blindness. So I've had to come back through a lot, and I guess maybe sometimes I'm just too dumb to quit. So I just keep coming back. And a lot of people, you know, they I don't think my story is that interesting, but they do. I'm relatable to a lot of people, because a lot of people they either know somebody that's addicted, that have had addiction problems, or they have it themselves. So I'm a little bit more relatable than a lot of people out there.
Well, a lot of us, and this pandemic hasn't been good for those struggling with addictions. A lot of times people are coping by staring at the bottom of an empty bottle every night, popping the pills, smoking pot, whatever it takes to get by, they're doing. and COVID has been the catalyst for that. What's your message to those folks, Richard, struggling to get by just to see the next day? A lot of those folks are listening right now. What are you telling them?
Well, I just threw my own mental health summit April 3rd. It was called Today I Decide. And what that means is the three most important words in the English language are today I decide. You can decide not to go to bed the same person that you woke up as. It's up to you to make that decision and then act upon it. If anybody's struggling, they can realize that they don't have to be that person they are anymore. Mm. They can change. Anybody can change. Use those three words, today I decide.
This week's Hometown Hero. Join us next week as we search for your home, your town, your hero. It's Hometown Heroes on Family Life.
Thank you much, Bill. Hometown Heroes comes your way every Tuesday during the Noon Report.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. Well, the humidity is back and it's going to be sticking around for a while. And in this rather humid air, some showers and thunderstorms will emerge, some with downpours. Now, to complicate matters, the remnants of Tropical Storm Fred move into Pennsylvania and the southern tier of New York later tomorrow and tomorrow night, enhancing the rainfall and possibly leading to some localized flooding, especially northeast Pennsylvania and south central New York. Something to keep an eye on. So our call for this afternoon, cloudy, hazy, humid. From time to time, a shower, a thunder shower with a local downpour, a high in the mid-70s to near 80. Rather cloudy and humid tonight and tomorrow with a few showers and thunderstorms. Low tonight, mid-60s and near 70. Mid-70s to mid-80s tomorrow. And again, there could be some enhanced rainfall later tomorrow night into Thursday morning from central and northeast Pennsylvania into south central New York. Some localized flooding could ensue.
All right, Kevin, thank you for that. Finally at noon today, baseball card. Yeah, a few of us have those hanging around, but probably none like this. A rare Honus Wagner baseball card has just sold at auction for a record $6.6 million. Yeah, for a piece of cardboard. The 1909 card breaks the record for the most expensive sports card ever. The previous record of $5.2 million was set in January by a 1952 Mickey Mantle card and in April by a LeBron James rookie basketball card. It is believed that there are only 60 of these Honus Wagner baseball cards left in the world. And that's the world we live in. Tuesday, the 17th of August. I'm Bob Price, Family Life News.
You've been listening to the Noon Report, heard weekdays on Family Life. Thank you for listening.